The last couple of weeks, we've talked about the power of water. 3 weeks ago, Reggie preached about the sin of water. And so we've been doing a lot of discussion about water. And then this morning, everything kind of... Let's just put it this way. I don't have my iPad. I don't have a computer. I don't have a printout of the sermon I had. So I've written it handwritten. I can't even read my own handwriting most of the time. I've written an outline at this point. So this could be an interesting morning. But let's just put it this way. The Lord's got something He wants to share this morning. So we're just going to go with it. It may even be different than what the week was. And maybe that was His way of making sure I preached what He wanted today anyway. So we are going to review a little bit this morning. So I want you to turn in chapter 14 of Job for a moment. I'm going to read some verses that we heard 3 weeks ago when Reggie spoke at homecoming. And then I'm going to continue from there. We're going to jump into something I covered 2 weeks ago, except we're going to dive into the story just a little bit deeper this morning. Last week, we talked about the first of the two natures of water that we talked 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago about. Is it confusing yet? Because I'm going to straighten it all up here in just a second. But 2 weeks ago, I opened up this series following up on what Reggie had talked about the scent of water. And basically, what that was out of Job chapter 14, starting in verse 7. It says, "For there is hope for a tree, if it is cut down, that it will sprout again, and its tender roots or tender shoots will not cease. Though its root may grow old in the earth, and its stump may die in the ground, yet at the scent of water it will bud and bring forth branches like a plant. But if man dies and is laid away, indeed he breathes his last. And where is he?" Reggie talked about that, and I appreciate him sharing with us the message he shared that day. And one of the things that he talked about was how, now the description that we have here is of a tree in some regards that has been pruned. Now, any of you who do any kind of farming, so to speak, as far as, or have an orchard, possibly, or an apple tree, or, you have a fruit tree, one of the big things you have to do with it is prune it. You've got to cut away some of the old growth so that the new growth can come. And when the spring comes and there's this scent of water that comes in and it starts to grow within the tree and it starts to come up through, new shoots will come. That was the discussion we had a few weeks ago. And then it continued on here, but I want to focus on verse 9 just for a moment. It says, "At the scent of water it will bud and bring forth branches like a plant." 2 weeks ago, I compared us to water. 2 weeks ago, I compared us to being like water and said that we need to be able to be fluid and to be able to conform to the situation or adapt to the situation, not conform. But remember the statement I made about that, you know, Bruce Lee said that you put water in a cup and it becomes the cup. Well, when we pour ourselves into Christ, we become Christ. That's where we've been talking for the last couple of weeks. I may not have worded it that way, but I've led us into that discussion. And then I talked about the power of water. The power of water has two different types of power. And we talked about the destructive and the healing or life-giving. Last week, I talked about the destructive power of water and how water can be destructive, but it can also be controlled and uncontrolled destruction. And I talked about the circumstances that surround that. Well, this week, I want us to talk about the second of these, and that is this life-giving, this life-giving power of water. Water is powerful. We've discussed how it's powerful through the storms. We've discussed how it can be powerful when it comes to our desire as far as to get out and just see it move land. I mean, if you take a water hose or a pressure washer and you start to go, and water will take dirt off of anything with that kind of pressure behind it. And it really is just water. There's machines that have been designed on the power of water that if you put enough pressure behind it, it can cut things. I mean, there are plenty of different ways that water can work. But then there was also that calmness, that life-giving aspect, the fact that we're made up of 70% of it, the fact that I have a bottle of water up here right now just so I can talk to you for a couple more minutes. But what we see in this today is this. John chapter 4 is where I want us to go back to. I want to look at this story a little bit deeper. Last week I talked about how water can be destructive, and we will allude back to that a little bit today. But today I want us to talk about the properties of water, the life-giving, healing, fulfilling, saving properties of water. There's a number of words I can use with it there. But, I mean, just, you know, let's think about some of the positive things we can do with water. If we looked at Leviticus chapter 8, in Leviticus 8, Moses and Aaron wash the men. I mean, so we know water can be cleansing, right? You go back to Exodus and see what the power of water is. Let's see. Obviously, we need water to survive. So we've talked about this in the past where Moses, in chapter 17, was instructed by God to get water out of the rock. Now, Moses went about getting it the wrong way. And we could talk about the destructive thing, but God provided water from a rock so that Moses and the Israelites could have water. If we go back a couple chapters into chapter 15, it says that Moses had brought Israel from the Red Sea and they went to the wilderness of Shur. And as they were there, they had gone without water for 3 days. The water was bitter. It wasn't something they could taste. God told them to cut down a tree, throw it into the water, and it became sweet. So we see the power of water, but also our necessity for it. So I want us to take a moment, and I don't necessarily want to focus on us being water today so much as us becoming like water, in that whatever water rests in, it becomes. Whatever water flows around, it forms and fills to, I mean, when we see water put into a cup, as I said, it becomes the cup. It fills out the holes that are there. When water takes over and begins to flood areas, it is getting into every little crack, crevice, and nook and cranny, whatever you want to call them. But in John chapter 4, what we see happening here and what we see taking place, I had read a few of these verses a couple weeks ago, and I had alluded to this life-giving power of water. Where we need to start today is realizing who the water is. And I'm not talking about us becoming the water so much as I'm talking about the living water of Christ. Christ offers himself to this woman. He offers her some fulfilling water. Water is healing. We are like water in many ways. We can become like water, and we need to become like this water. Not become that water, because it's impossible for us to become the living water. But it's not impossible for us to become like that living water, because when we become like that living water, we allow that water to become us, if that makes sense. And if not, I hope I explain it a little bit. But it's not about us becoming living water so much as allowing living water to become us. Because as Christians, we are supposed to allow Christ in to our hearts. And when Christ comes in, he becomes like water. When the water fills the cup becomes the water. Right? The cup then has the power to become like the water. And the water that is being poured in begins to overflow and begins to flow out. And it becomes something that I can share with you and you can share with someone else, and we can all share with one another, and we can fellowship in his spirit and in his living water. But we see the story of the Samaritan woman who's sitting by the well. And I didn't go into a lot of detail a couple weeks ago, but this time I want to look at the entirety of the story. A couple weeks ago, I only read just a small part, basically telling you about verse 10, where Jesus says, if you knew the gift of God and who it is that says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. And I stopped there. Go back to verse 7 with me for a moment. Starting in verse 7, It says a woman of Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Then the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Let's stop there and let's look at this context of what we're talking about. One, Jesus is thirsty. Jesus, as we've established many times, is both 100% God and 100% man. So Jesus did have the needs of a man. He was thirsty. He sat down to ask for a drink. First and foremost, we've got to understand something. Jesus didn't care who he asked for the drink. In fact, I would venture to say Jesus was actually, I would say something may be coming on. It doesn't necessarily tell us this, but it does say that the disciples had gone on. Jesus had sat there, and if we go back, it was about the sixth hour of the day. It was later in the, what would that be? 12, noon, lunch, somewhere around that. So Jesus is sitting out there. It's around lunchtime. It's the heat of the day, and Jesus just wants a drink of water. He's been traveling, he's resting, and he's sitting on Jacob's well, and he's waiting. Now, I don't know for a fact how many people may have come and gone prior to this Samaritan woman coming, but I do think that Jesus had a specific purpose for speaking to her. The reason being that she was in a life that wouldn't have necessarily felt like she was very privileged. She wouldn't have necessarily felt like she had anything going for her. Number one, you see that in her statement back to him in verse 9. You see how she feels about society in her statement back. Verse 9, she's a victim of that destructive water we talked about last week. She is a victim of the water that we seek to fulfill our lives with. She's a victim of the world who has basically shunned her to the side because of her appearance, because of her nationality, whatever it might be. She's not a Jew, so the Jews do not speak to her. And you see that in the statement she makes to Jesus. The woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink of me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Have we ever felt that way before, that somebody spoke to us, and all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute, what are you doing speaking to me? Whether it be from the side of the Jew or the side of the Samaritan, have we ever had those moments in our lives where we questioned why someone would even take the time knowing who they are? I would venture to say that every single one of you, at one time or another, maybe even this last week, has had that experience in your life. Now, Jesus then responds to her, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." We talked about what that living water is, and Jesus is that living water that he offered the woman. Because this is not water you can draw from the earth. But let me tell you what happens when our mindset is not about the same as the Savior's. Our mindset needs to be the same as his for us to move forward. We've got to become like the living water to understand living water. Because her response gives us a lot of things that we need to know about that. But in verse 10, Jesus offers her a fulfilling, final drink of water, a water that will cause you not to thirst anymore. You see where I'm going with this healing power of water is this: Jesus is that healing water. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Jesus is the healing power of water. He is the healing, the life-giving. He is the saving. He is the fulfilling power of water. But what he says to her in verse 10, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would ask him for a drink." How many times do we feel like we maybe have neglected to know God? How many times in your life have you neglected to know who it is that asks you to do something? Jesus just simply asked for a drink. He said, give me a drink. And she said, why are you talking to me? But then I find it more interesting. She still didn't get it, folks. She still didn't understand what Jesus was offering. The woman said to him, sir, you have nothing to draw with. You can see the picture. You know what's going on here. Jesus is sitting there with empty hands. The woman has come to draw water from the well, and Jesus just simply says, can I have a drink? She's like, wait, I'm a Samaritan, you're a Jew. You shouldn't be talking to me. Jesus says, if you knew who asked, you would ask him for a drink. Well, how are you going to give me a drink? You don't have anything to dip water with. I mean, we can imagine that scene because we live it daily. When Christ asks us to do something, when God comes to us and says, I need you to do this for me, we look at God and say, but I don't have, but you don't have, but so? Because she continues and says, so you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? Do we question God that way sometimes? Do we question life that way sometimes? Moses did, and what did God continue to do? He kept just throwing things at him. Moses is like, I can't speak. All right, then take Aaron. Well, I don't speak well. Like I said, take Aaron. You know, it was all about what God could do to fulfill what he needed to do. And it was going to happen through Moses. And this was going to happen through this Samaritan woman. And for this Samaritan woman, because Jesus was the living water and he was offering her a drink. But then she continues. And I find it interesting that this Samaritan woman asks him a question that maybe a Jew would have asked. Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock? Jacob, who was also named Israel. But she's a Samaritan. So why is she coming to the well of Jacob? Well, because she needed it. She needed water, just like anyone else. We all need a drink of water today. We all need to find that water in our life, that water that will fulfill us, that water that will save us, that will heal us, that will give us life. We need the scent of that water because we've been cut off. Remember, Jesus used the analogy that we are the vine, or that he is the vine and we are the branches. And the vine gets pruned every once in a while. But that living water that is flowing through that vine and the branches that maybe get cut down a little bit will grow back with new growth if you just smell the water. If you just get in there and get a taste of that water, it will grow within you and you will become what you are to become. And that's what Jesus is offering her. And she asks him the question, are you greater than our father Jacob? You know, verse 11 and 12 tells me this much. She came with doubt. She was very doubtful. You can't draw, you're not able. And we do this every day when we look at our lives and we say, God, I know I've asked you for this. I'm not real sure you're hearing me. God, I know that this needs to be done, but I'm not the one to do it. God, I realize that you've called me to speak to those who are a burden to me. I realize that you've called me to be an example to the other students around me in school. I realize that you've called me to be an example to my coworkers. I realize that you've called me to deal with circumstances and situations just a little bit better in my life than I do. But Lord, you don't understand. You don't understand that I just got so much stress and I've got this happening and that happened. And the reality of it is, he does understand. Because she asks him the question, are you greater than Jacob? And he answers her and says, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. The source of the water are two different things that we're seeing here. Jacob's well is in the world. It is on the world. It is a well that they can go to, they can draw water, and they can take. Jesus tells us that when the living water is poured into you as the vessel, as the cup, it becomes a fountain from within you that will overflow. It is a fountain because you then become the source. Do you see how beautiful that is for us to think about today? We cry out to God and we say, God, you can't do this. God, you can't do that. God, this day is just going to get worse because there's no possible way I have what it takes to get there. And God says, do you have me? Do you have that living water within you? Because it's a fountain that flows to eternal life. It's a fountain that springs up from within you because I am in you. You have taken me in. And now you will not thirst. Does that mean physical thirst? No. But spiritually, we have found something that is greater than this world can offer. Because the things of this world, the alcoholism, the drugs, the sex, the things that happen in the world today, although it's fulfilling for a moment, and maybe it gives you peace for a day, at some point, you're going to come back to it and you're going to say, I want that again. I need that again. I need to do this. I need to do that. And honestly, that's why the church today in America has seen this influx of folks who come to the altar every week because they just need to rededicate their lives. You have drank of that living water. You have put that within you. Rededication should not need to happen in that way. There are some who have accepted it that way. Now, am I saying that we don't need to rededicate ourselves to Christ? No. But I'm saying that coming to the altar and acting like it's the first time every time doesn't give you fulfillment. And my question to you would be, are you really drinking of that water in that situation? You know, verses 13 and 14, Jesus gives the answer of what this water is. And I just want to continue on real quickly. Because each of us have this availability of water to come from within. Verses 15 through 17 here, we start to see her response and we see kind of a conversation take place. And she says, sir, give me this water that I may not thirst nor come here to draw. That is a response that was given. But then we see what needs to happen. And this is where we start to wrap things up this morning. And we need to understand this real quickly. Jesus then asks her to do something about her life. Because Jesus then responds and says, go and call your husband and come here. Now, Jesus being Jesus knew the answer to the question she was about to, or to the statement she was about to make. Because the woman then said, I have no husband. Now, we do that a lot. We come up with excuses or we don't give full truths. Because Jesus then says, you are correct and you have well said, I have no husband, for you have had five husbands. And the one you have now is not your husband. In that you spoke truly. He gives her credit for being honest. But then he also reminds her that there's something she's got to take care of. He reminds her that there is something. And she says, sir, I perceive you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain. And you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship. And then we get into this circumstance and we see something and why it is important. And as we get ready to close things out, there's still doubt within the woman because you notice she goes back into an accusation here. She says, you Jews, like, I'm not welcome where you say I should worship. I'm not welcome with what this is happening. I'm not welcome. And Jesus responds to that today. And this is his response to you. When you feel you're not welcome to worship, when you feel you're not welcome to take a drink of the living water, when you feel that you're not welcome to be here this morning, let me read this to you. This is Jesus' response to her, but it's Jesus' response to you. Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour is coming and now is when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and in truth. And she responds and says, I know the Messiah is coming. He who is called Christ. When He comes, He will tell us all things. And Jesus says to her, I who speak to you am He. Now, not many times in the scripture do you see Jesus just blatantly outright say, I'm the one. I'm the Christ. You know, even with Pilate, it says, are you the Son of God? He says, there are some who say, I am. He doesn't give an actual direct answer. He gives it directly in a roundabout way sometimes. Jesus straight up tells the woman here. He says, I am the one. But He a lot of times had to be asked because He needed to be recognized first. He needed for them to recognize who He was before just outright saying, well, I am Him. Think about that today. He needs us to recognize Him before just outright saying, it's me that can give you this. Yes, He wants to speak with us. He wants us to take a drink of that water that He offers. He wants us to experience that in our lives today. But He first needs us to recognize who He is. Do you recognize Him today? You know, her response is about seeking. It's about turning a life around. The response Jesus gives her is that you're right, you're living in sin, but I have what you need. And then when she says that about worship and says that I should go to Jerusalem to worship, Jesus says there'll be a day when the place doesn't matter, when the situation doesn't matter. And He even pretty well addresses saying that it didn't necessarily matter whether it was a Jew, Gentile, whatever. He says the true worshiper believes and worships in spirit and in truth. There's no limit to what Jesus is talking about here. There's no one disqualified because they've disqualified themselves because they're not worthy. Social status doesn't matter. I don't care if somebody's told you you're not worthy to receive this today. You are. You're more than worthy to receive this healing, living water. So we talk about the power of water. We wrap this up and I ask you just this. What about you? What about you today? Well, I want to put it to you this way. When you accept that water, when you accept Him into your life, when you accept how things are, and you accept that He can do those things, then you find yourself desiring to not only allow that water to take hold in you. When you take a drink of the living water and it becomes you, and it becomes a fountain in you, you stop worrying about where you can get a drink, and you start looking at places that you can disperse the overflow. Because it becomes a fountain within you. And it becomes something that you can drink of. And that you can also offer to others. Because you can introduce them to that water today. And I cannot find this. But what we see, I want you to understand something about that. And the reason I say it that way, that we can actually offer that. If we go to Isaiah chapter 41, verse 17, it says this. They shall be turned back. They shall be greatly ashamed who trust in carved images, who say, or that's 42. That's not the right one. Let's go back to 41, 17. The poor and needy seek water, but there is none. Their tongues fail for thirst. I, the Lord, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers in desolate heights and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. And then the last thing I want us to look at. Now, you think about that in Isaiah, and he says that the poor and needy need, they will seek for water. And then in Proverbs 11:25 says this to us this morning. The generous soul will be made rich, and he who waters will also be watered himself. Folks,
he who waters will also be watered himself. You are the fountain in the dry land. You are the fountain that has now been sprung up in a desolate and discouraging situation. You are the fountain in the midst of destruction because you have had that power poured into you the day you took your drink of that living water. The day you asked Him to come into your life and to give you that drink of living water, you became the fountain that is now in the valley that the poor and the needy are crying out for, that Isaiah talked about. Because Jesus was the source. And that source springs up within the fountains that have drank, that are branched off of it. If you think about it, there's always a source of water in this world. There's a water table, and you can find the sources, and you can set wells, you can set springs, you can set different places where the water can be accessible. We are the spring of the living water because it wells up within inside of us, and we become a fountain that others can drink from because they see His example in us. They see how we live our lives, and they want to take a drink too. But we've got to be careful that the drink we're offering isn't like Moses did. We don't just force the water upon them. We ask, and it comes. That's what God told Moses to do. Instead, he hit the rock, and the water came. And that is a forced religion, so to speak. That is when you're forcing something out. Yes, it's going to maybe serve the same purpose. I'm just going to tell you. Stop trying to force it, and just let it flow. Because when you let that water flow out of you, when you let Christ take hold within you, you look like Him. That's why when Judgment Day comes and Jesus is, I don't want to say the lawyer, but Jesus steps in and says, this one's with me. Jesus steps in and He says, I've covered this one. Because, you know, if we can see each other the way that God sees us because of the grace of Christ, what was it C.S. Lewis said? We would bow down and worship one another because we would not be able to contain ourselves. Because that's how glorious God sees us, because Christ has washed us clean. Now, I don't know about that because I can't see you in that way and you can't see me in that way. But what I can say is this. We are a well. We are a fountain that is springing up life because we have that life within us. So where is the healing water in this world today? It's right here. It's right here within this body. It comes from within each one of us when we accept Him as our own. And we are asked to give a drink. And why are we asked to give a drink? Proverbs 11:25.